On the cover, we see a row of theater chairs and the back of Alina and Ben's heads silhouetted against a large movie theater screen. In the film, we see Crosswind wielding a wooden stake against a vampiric librarian who is trying to suck his blood.
Are you seeking thrilling tales of adventure and superheroics? Do you crave the weekly drama of teenage hijinks and high school angst? Then don't miss the next issue of These Protean City Comics. This issue featuring
Crosswind. You know Windshear? I'm the gritty reboot.
Frequency, bringing the megahertz.
I'm Alina. The rest is need to know.
Now, with our heroes assembled, let's turn the page on this issue of Protean City Comics.
This is Protean City Comics, issue number 89, Graveyard Smash. Our first panel is the roof of a building in Protean City. It is a skyscraper. It is in sort of the city center. It is among the tallest buildings, and it is pouring rain this evening. The sky is orange with the setting sun, and the rain is like, it's heavy rain, and the clouds are these like roiling black and gray clouds that descend down closer to the city as they sort of hit the shoreline, and you can see flashes of light in those clouds. And we cut in close to the top of this building, and we see a man in a white lab coat drenched in water, and he is standing next to a gurney that he's wheeled up on top of this tower, and next to him is next to him and the gurney is some weird looking machine, and extending upwards into the sky out of this machine is what looks like maybe a television receiver. So it's this big antenna thing, and lightning cracks, and we see like one panel of lightning shooting down from the sky, and it hits this receiver, and energy runs down the cable and into the machine, and then from the machine into this figure under the gurney, or on the gurney, under a blanket, under a sheet, and we see like a few panels of this figure where we see like their silhouette under the sheet, and then we see like just their body illuminated, and we see their bones under their skin, and then it flickers and it stops, and we see just the man and the gurney in the rain, and then the figure on the gurney sits up, and we cut away. We're going to cut to Ben and Alina, who are currently at you're in a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
It is Halloween. It is the night before Halloween. And this movie theater is running an old-timey Halloween spooky movie marathon. And it's kind of, they've been doing this on and off. Like, they've been doing this marathon for maybe half of the week. They've just been running, like, endless horror films. And so people have just been kind of coming and going. And this is kind of near your neighborhood. And so you've come here this evening to just hang out, get away from the world, stop thinking about supervillains and superheroes, and just enjoy a spooky movie. So let's start with just what are your go-to snacks for these movies? Where do you sit in the theater?
I think Alina is Junior Mints, and she's
presumably you're sitting together.
Yes.
I mean, I guess I don't know that you are.
Well, I mean, maybe we have the discussion. She probably is aisle seat somewhere close to the exit.
Yeah, that's not where I sit at all.
Yeah, that's not near. I imagine Ben sits near the center of the theater.
Absolutely. So Ben sits like middle-ist row, middle-ist seat.
Mm-hmm.
If there's someone like sitting close by, he doesn't care. He'll sit right next to him just to get that one seat.
Okay. And what is his go-to theater snack?
Oh, it's ridiculous watching him carry everything in. It's like a large popcorn, large soda, like bunch of crunch, and he eats it all, but he feels sick for like 5 hours afterwards.
Okay. And so where is your compromise? Like, if Ben wants to sit dead center in the theater and Alina wants to sort of sit off to one side in the aisle, have you compromised? Are you sitting not with each other? The theater is not super packed, so you'll have your choice of seats.
Okay.
I'm just sitting here looking at two faces that are like, I'm not compromising.
I think the best compromise that we could probably reach is that we put the earwigs on. And so we just talk to each other via the earwigs so we don't have to shout across the aisles. Okay. And it's kind of like we're watching it together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say that's fair.
Both look insane because we're whispering to ourselves.
Yeah.
In the theater.
So this is, it's not late in the evening. It's maybe 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It's starting to get sort of dark. The rain has started again. It has been raining off and on the last couple days. And so, of course, you know the thunderstorms are not done. This is just spooky Halloween weather. And there's like, you hear a thunderclap outside and the lights in the theater flicker a little bit. Because this is like not like a super modern theater. This is a pretty cool old timey theater. It's actually got a little bit of a stage up front next to the actual screen where sometimes they do they have presentations or talks there. One time recently they had a screening of Mad Max where they brought in an actual orchestra to perform the score for the show. And so it's like, that's why you guys, I'm sure, Ben, you know, the people who like run the theater, like it's a local neighborhood movie theater. And it is filled with, because it's sort of early evening, you haven't quite got the big crowds yet. But there are maybe a handful, like a dozen or so kids about your age. They're all hanging out up in the back of the theater, by the projector where they can kind of sit in the back and look out, probably not pay attention to the movie too much. And then there's a couple handful of couples, and groups of people scattered around the rest of the theater. And it's maybe like maybe a third to a half full. But no one's feeling like there's no like big crowd anxiety going on. Like it's comfortable. And the lights dim and the movie begins. And what's a good movie for this to be? What's a good horror film? I'm imagining some kind of a like Night of the Living Dead, black and white, not necessarily like gore horror, but like,
yeah, like old classic, almost like campy B movie, something or other. Yeah.
They've been doing this horror show spectacular nonstop for days, so they've really dug to the bottom of the barrel now.
How about it's a B movie by a little known filmmaker who grew up just outside Protean City, and it's called It Came from the Deepest Depths.
Okay. And is it a Kraken attacking the ships and the city kind of movie?
It's one of those movies where it was revolutionary because it never fully showed the monster, and that's what made it really, really scary.
Okay, cool. So. I like that. I like that a lot. And so you start to watch this movie, and it's And every once in a while, there's another like crack of thunder and lightning, and the lights flicker. And a couple times, the like there's like a minute in the in, there's like a, there's a little bit of time in the middle of the movie where the lights flicker, and you can see that the projector skips a couple frames, and then like the audio is offset for a while, and then there's like there's somebody back there, and he's like kind of like you can hear the sounds of someone futzing with an actual projector, and they're able to like line back up the audio and the video again, And everything is kind of going well. Like this is, it's a B movie. But it's someone who's local to Protean City, a director that you probably have heard a lot about because they're from the area. And so like you're enjoying yourselves. You're having a good time. You're whispering to each other through your little earbuds, and you're enjoying your snacks. And then like maybe about like 2/3 of the way through the movie, there's like a little bit of a commotion in the back of the theater. And you can see on the screen projected the silhouette of someone like slowly shuffling past the projector, and they kind of get to the middle of the screen and they stop, and they're just standing there.
So Alina is probably already radar up, so she's turning around to see what's going on back there.
You see a crowd of there's like, again, this is back where like there's up at the top of the theater, there's mm-hmm. a bunch of the kid like the teenagers who are sitting in the back who are just looking for a place to get away, and they are all sort of facing it. A bunch of them have turned now to look at this group of two or three, maybe like it's hard to tell because it's dark, but they're a little bit taller and they look a little older than you guys, but they're clearly not like they're maybe like just on that cusp of being college students, and they are just kind of like standing and swaying together, looming over this group of teenagers who are sitting back there. And the kids are like, hey man, what's going on? Like, why, like you're in the way. And these figures are just kind of standing and swaying and not really saying anything.
Oh no. So maybe Alina gets up and starts walking towards the looming figures.
Okay. So if the movie theater is set up so that there's like a chunk of seats in the middle, and then there's a row, and then there's the sides. There's like a smaller section on each side.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are up in the back. And So are you coming up the alley or the aisle that's on the teenager's side, or are you coming up behind these figures?
Well, I think I'm going to sort of nonchalantly like climb over seats, kind of hugging the walls, trying to gain the advantage by approaching from the rear.
Okay. And Ben, what are you doing?
I paid good hard-earned money to see this, like to see this movie, and these people are ruining it. So at first, I was with like the high schoolers, the teenagers. I guess I'm also a high schooler. but I'm with them and shouting like, hey, sit down, mumbling to myself. Like, I can't stand people who show up to the movie late. Yeah. And then they just walk through. It's like, just find a seat, sit down.
That's it, yeah.
So I'm probably going up the other aisle, but I'm making a little bit more of a scene. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, come on, just find a seat, sit down. There's tons of seats. Come on.
Okay. And so you see, because you're coming around the face side of these group of people. And as you sort of, you're making a big scene, and as you get up to the top of this theater, you can see they turn and face you, and you catch the silhouette of their one of their faces in the light of the projector, and you can see that they have like just like dark circles on, or like dark lines under their eyes, and their mouths are kind of stained red with something, and there's like loose skin hanging off of their faces, and the one, and we see like one panel of this, and the one figure just says, "Brains," and starts to lurch towards you. And we're going to cut there. And we're going to go and find Ramon. You, when we last saw you, you were hanging out with John, and you had gone to a different dimension to find a magical artifact of some sort, or some sort of a thing that is what allows the end to destroy worlds. And you came back, and you've been kind of in this like, John broke a time machine, the thing that was your way home. Mm-hmm. And so you've been on him.
Yes.
Since he came back, you've been like following him around. You've been there at his house, I'm assuming 8 a.m., 7 a.m., 6 a.m. every day.
And sometimes like way earlier, sometimes just like 2 o'clock, like just arrive at his window and like,
yeah. And hey, he doesn't always let you in, but the moment he leaves his apartment, you're there with him.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Pushing him to do this. So as of yesterday, he has disappeared. He isn't in, like, you showed up in the morning to his apartment, and he wasn't there. You woke his dad up. He wasn't thrilled.
And I did not take off my mask or costume.
Sure.
So I was a scary leather person.
His dad is
at his home.
Yeah. His dad's not sleeping too much because, again, his work is hard. And his wife is in jail, and things are just like kind of weird. And so he was not happy, and he kind of yelled at you a little bit. You go to the lighthouse to find John, and he's not there either. And really, like, you do your due diligence, and you look around, you go to Peacoy, you go to all the places he could be. And he's really, like, he's slipped away from, like, at least if he's in the city somewhere, then you're having some trouble finding him.
Yeah.
Where would you be now? Like, I don't know if you've given up or taking a break from looking for him. But
as much as he is interested in looking for John at all times to get information from John, I think he's seen also that, like, he's not necessarily going to get anywhere from this. And so second best right now is trying to, like, get information, understand things.
Okay.
And so, like, he's found, like, this great old library. Which, like, it's kind of like midway between like a used bookstore and like a place that people use for some sort of reference. They sell some very bad coffee that's like way too expensive. That's the only thing that keeps the doors open.
It's not the Protean City Library. It's not like the proper library.
Huge place.
This is down towards the Bash. There was like a wealthy organization of people who started building an antique bookstore, and it kind of just like didn't do super well. And so they were just, but they loved books. And so they were going out and collecting books. And at some point they realized this bookstore was really like more like a library than anything else. And so it kind of just became this sort of de facto, they pivoted a little bit. And so people come in, there's long tables for you to sit and read. There's shelves and shelves of books, and it's a large place now, but it's not like, it's not huge. What are you looking for this evening?
Right now he's looking for like magical texts.
Okay.
Which are way above his level of comprehension. Like he is, an excellent reader. He's, educated himself in books quite a bit, but like from where he came from, magic is not real.
Yeah.
So
just superheroes.
Just
superheroes. Yeah, superheroes, yeah. But like, you know, magic? Wizards? No. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
And so like he has no knowledge of this. And so he's reading things that are like beyond his level and might not even be real. It's probably more like history and art than like actual practice, which isn't what he's going for, but he's doing his best. And he is in his full leather costume. He's got like a brown trench coat pulled over it and a fedora on top of his head.
Of course.
That he's got kind of like pulled down, and he thought he looked real subtle, and he doesn't. He looks like a terrifying invisible man.
Yeah. There's this, there's a woman in kind of like a slouchy sweater. And she has like big headphones on, and she's like kind of like bopping to whatever music she's listening to, and she brings like a stack of a couple books, and she's walking, and she kind of like looks at you. She goes to sit down because it's the closest table to where the path is, and she kind of looks over at you and just sort of like slowly picks her books back up and walks maybe like to the next cubby over and sits down over there. And there's maybe a handful of other people around.
And Crosswind is just kind of like, he's giving them looks of, like, stay away. He's very much looking to get through his things. And like a gloved hand comes up and just rubs the front of his mask for a second. And he shakes his head and just goes, this is getting nowhere. I need Sage's eyes on this. Or frequency on the other stuff. Or Alina to find John, or God, I just need anybody. I just need anybody to figure this out for me.
You can't really drink coffee. You said they sell like kind of crappy coffee. Do you have coffee to drink?
He has recently figured out how to fit a straw into the mask.
Okay.
But they don't sell iced coffee.
Okay.
So he is not drinking coffee.
Okay.
He came in with a iced McDonald's coffee because he's trying to make things last because he's not working right now.
Yeah.
And is just kind of living on the money he made when he was working.
Okay. So you're maybe going to take a drink, or you're having that moment where you're just like, God, I need I can't do this by myself. I need someone to help. And there is just this like crash of thunder. And it's so loud that it shakes this old building you're in, and you kind of like look up because you can hear there's a big like circular window, and the glass is this like double paned storm window kind of stuff, and it's rattling back and rattling like that's how close this lightning strike was, and so you're looking up at this window as the rain starts to come down, and up past the glass outside, for a moment, the clouds part on a full moon, and this light of the full moon beams down into the city, into this small library that you're in, and you can see that it comes down and starts to it's a very clear beam because of all the dust and just sort of like atmosphere in this old library, and the beam of light from the moon hits the table in the cubby over from yours, and you start to hear kind of a weird sound coming from where you know that woman went to go sit down, but you can't quite see her. It sounds like she's shuffling around, like she can't quite get comfortable or something like that. It doesn't sound like she's comfortable, at least.
Okay. Does it sound like distress?
Yeah. It's right. It's like right borderline, but it's a little bit concerning.
Okay. Well, luckily, Crosswind is at all times now super paranoid. So yeah. He is going for it.
Super paranoid.
Super paranoid. So like he stands up and puts down the books and just like unbuttons the front of his jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can just like flow to the side, and we get a panel of him like standing in front of like with the window up in front and just like turning and like charging towards where this is, ready to just throw down at whatever's inside.
Mm-hmm. And when you
I'm doing great these days, by the way.
Yeah. So you, like, you don't have that far to go. So this is a very short sprint. You just, like, sprint a couple steps and turn around a bookshelf that sort of forms this barrier between these little alcoves. And you see this woman, and she's kind of, like, hunched over the book that she was reading. And she's, like, kind of, like, writhing in her own skin. And she's clearly, like, not, she's really not comfortable. And the headphones fall off. And you can hear, they're very loud. You can hear, like, this voice from a radio station. And, like, so she's not listening to, like she's listening to a radio station because there's an announcer. And she turns and looks up at you, and you can see that her face is covered in hair, and her mouth is starting to elongate outward into a snout, and she just, like, bares her teeth and snarls at you, and you can see that as she lets go of the book, her hands have become these, like, werewolfy claws.
All right, Crosswind holds up a hand to her and says, "Miss, it looks like you're experiencing a transformation. I think we should step outside real quick. You and I can have a word, make sure everybody's going to be safe in here. Do you understand me?"
And we're going to cut away back to the theater on that. So, Ben, this figure has turned to face you, and in this, like, low, guttural voice just said, "Brains." And where they had been, like, these, there's maybe, like, three or four of these figures, tall and hunched over this, in the middle of this row, and they had just sort of been swaying back and forth looking at this group of teenagers. This one that looks at you, it locks eyes and starts to hurtle over the seats, not in perhaps the slow shuffling of a zombie that you might have expected, but and it is just hurling itself towards you.
Oh, okay. So in a, it's going pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's some kind of a fast zombie or something like that.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
fast zombies.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Rage virus. It's okay. Up until now, I've been thinking this is just like a group of people in costume.
Yeah.
Just
being trying dicks.
Being obnoxious. But having one of them, like, coming after me is startling. So I probably, like, give a little yelp. Like, I'm like, "Wah!" And just start backing away a little bit, seeing what this person's doing.
Okay. They are not stopping. They are hurtling towards you. If you don't get out of the way, they're gonna tackle you.
Oh boy.
At this point, I step in. Alina steps in. I'm pushing Frequency out of the way.
Okay. It sounds like you're trying to defend him.
Yeah.
So would you please roll plus savior?
A 9.
Okay. So on a 7 to 9, it costs you. You expose yourself to danger or escalate the situation. So you also get to choose one from this list. Add one to the add one team to the pool. Take influence over Ben, or clear a condition.
I'd like to clear a condition. I'm gonna clear hopeless.
But you are going to expose yourself to danger. So are you? To make sure that I understand this correctly, you're turning and facing Ben and using your telekinesis to move him out of the way.
I'm probably going to shout his name just because it helps me focus.
Okay. So you shout Ben and throw him out of the way at the last minute, and this zombie form tumbles it leaps towards him, and at the last minute you're pulled out of the way by this invisible hand, and it tumbles past you because it has, like, continued to leap with its grabbing hands, and it just, like, is, like, now barrel rolling down this slope of the aisle. And Alina, when you sort of, like, you're focused now kind of on the other side of the theater and on Ben, and when you refocus to yourself and your own surroundings, you find that two of the zombies have, or two of these forms are now barreling down on you.
Okay.
Because you yelled out a name and drew attention to yourself.
Yes.
So what are you going to do?
Well, this is fabulous. I'm going to square off against them.
Okay. And attack?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me what that looks like, and then roll to directly engage a threat.
Alina is going to go back into a fighting stance.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're shambling fast, it's a fast shamble towards her.
Kind of like arms out, grabbing, staggering back and forth, but like on that like teetering point of almost falling forwards.
Well, then it should be fairly easy to sweep the leg.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is what she's going to do.
So roll plus danger.
Okay. Okay. 5 plus 4 is 9. And then my danger is 1, so 10.
Nice.
Nice.
So on a 10 plus, you get to pick 2 from the list. Resist or avoid their blows, take something from them, create an opportunity for your allies, or impress, surprise, or frighten them.
I'm going to resist or avoid their blows.
Okay.
I'm just going to impress, surprise, or frighten.
Okay. So you, like I say, so tell, explain, so what, so you sweep the leg. Are you, like, just describe what that looks like for me.
Okay. So as they... are staggering towards her. There's like a panel of sort of like a heat map where Alina seeks out. It's like Alina vision, and and it is just like weak points and like observations sort of peppered all around the image of these two shambling figures. And so there's like bright neon kind of flashing, like almost a subtitle underneath says, "Do what you do best, sweep the leg." And so she does sort of one of those low spin kicky things and sort of, you know, hits her leg, goes through the first leg and then the second leg and then the third leg. And then the fourth leg. And then she, you know, spins back around to face both of them. Mm-hmm. And they're both sort of just toppled on top of each other.
They've begun crawling to get back up. But you'll have a moment to sort of collect yourself. And we're going to cut back to the library and Crosswind. This woman is... she is like arched her back and kind of like broad shoulders and like a hairy ridged spine have burst through the back of her sweater. And she has these like, she's developed these big, like really long arms, covered in thick wolf hair. And she kind of like, You had yelled out like excuse me, you seem to be having a transformation or something like that.
And she basically invited her to step outside so we can discuss making sure that everybody's safe.
Yeah, and she looks up at you and does this maneuver where she kind of like she pulls, like she has these long canine legs that have like hinged back in the other direction, and she like crouches up on the chair or like this little bench that she's been sitting on, and she is going to leap at you.
Kind of thought so. like he's like has one hand up and is very much in like a hey, let's calm down and talk to each other. But the minute she just comes up, he just like gets the other arm back and swings in.
All right.
To just try to bring down like a heavy overhand punch.
Okay. So roll to engage a threat.
That is 7 plus my locked danger of plus 3 brings me to 10.
All right. So then you also trade blows and you get to pick 2 from the list.
I'd like to take something from them.
Okay.
And impress, surprise, or frighten the opposition.
Okay. Okay. So.
Because I saw that she was like listening with like headphones before things went down, right?
Okay. Yeah. So she like leaps towards you, because they were kind of big headphones, and as her face transformed into this more canine like face, the headphones are still kind of around her neck. And so as she leaps for you, you can definitely grab her phone. Out of her, like where the headphones are connected to her phone. And so you will do that. I would like you to roll to take a powerful blow because a werewolf absolutely has just jumped at you.
Sounds good.
bad news for these booksellers.
Okay.
I just rolled a raw 11.
Oh, boy.
Plus 3 for my marked conditions.
Oh, no. So that's a 10 plus. So you will choose one from the list of remove yourself from the situation, lose control of your powers in a terrible way, or two options from the 7 to 9 list.
Could she like straight werewolf pounce me out the window?
Absolutely.
Because is she trying to like get away, or is she like trying to like, is this like a werewolf thing that she's trying to like freaking end me? Or is this like a, I happened to be nearby and she's werewolfing, so she might bound off.
All you know is that you were nearby when she was turning into a werewolf, and when you tried to approach her, she attacked you. But if you want to go out a window, that works for me.
I'd love to go out a window, personally.
Okay. So how does that, like, what option are you taking then?
Yeah, so I'm going to remove myself from the situation.
Okay.
And so I think she hurls herself at me, and, like, I get, like, one punch in, and I grab onto her phone, and I'm, like, ready to go, but she's just way bigger than I am.
Yeah.
Because I like my werewolf big, so I'm going to assume there's, like, a big werewolf.
Yeah.
And she just, like, tackles me out the window, and, like, there's a couple times in the air that I'm, like, trying to block off just, like, bites, and, like, there's, like, a panel that, like, the snarling face is, like, right next to mine, and, like,
oh,
just,
absolutely.
Like, fingers in the mouth. And just, like, shatter out this window, and there's just glass flying everywhere, and, like, the big trench coat flying to the sides with this huge, like, snarling monstrous werewolf on top.
Just, you are, like, you're tumbling with each other. You push off with your wind powers, and you hurtle backwards through this window, and we see one panel of the two of you kind of midair clawing at each other, but, like, you are head to toe covered in a leather suit. And so she's actually like struggling, like her hands are still not fully transformed into werewolf claws. And so the fingernails are kind of raking across this leather. And you are a little bit more used to flying than she is, being who you are. And so I think you are able to kind of like push off, and you are going to, you are going to, like, slam down onto the ground pretty, like, close to the entrance to this library. So you're, like, you're moving together, and then you push off, and you're going straight down, but the werewolf keeps moving through the air, and it lands, and you face each other maybe 20, 30 feet away from each other in the street, and then I guess you leave.
I'm running.
Okay.
She is bigger than me, and she's a werewolf.
Yeah.
And I've done my reading, and I know I don't have any silver.
Yeah.
Because my guy loves reading.
Yeah. And so
I'm getting out.
Are you running? Are you flying? Are you leaping? How do you leave?
I can't fly.
Okay.
So I'm leaping.
Okay.
Like big leaps, like bursting air leaps.
Okay. You hear for a moment chasing, like the sound of the hunt behind you. You leap, you blast yourself up onto a building, and you hear like just raw muscles. I guess you don't hear the muscles, but you hear the form of the werewolf.
No, I do.
Like just like raw muscular jumping. And it kind of doesn't quite make the jump. And so you hear the scrabbling of now sharper claws on like an air conditioner of metal shearing. And as you blast off away towards the next building, you just hear you maybe glance back and you see silhouetted against this orange sunsetted sky, this form of this like lanky tall werewolf as it stands up to its full like maybe 12, 14 foot height and just lets out like a ho into the night sky.
And Crosswind's fleeing is not like pretty, like he's not doing well. He like goes through a garbage can and like has to like he jumps into like someone's like rooftop garden and just wrecks it on his way through. He's doing very poorly at this.
So you have in your hand, this phone, and as you pulled it away from her, the headphones ripped out, and so the audio from the music starts to play just in your hand, and maybe it's like two or three leaps. Like it's as you like leap and crash into this rooftop garden that for the first time you hear the voice on the radio, and it's just saying, "And this has been the Bancroft Science Hour. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to join us tomorrow night at the Hope Eternal Cemetery for a graveyard bash with our friends, the Crypt Kickers, live in concert." And there's static, and music starts playing, and it's kind of this like goofy Halloween punk rock album from what you can assume are the Crypt Kickers. We're going to cut back now to our friends in the movie theater. So, Ben, you have just been thrown probably into a couple seats.
Yep.
And you were maybe finding your feet again as you turned to see Alina kind of like dive and sweep the leg to tumble. And the couple zombies that were lunging at her fall past her. And the one final zombie that was up in this main group is now kind of hunched over, grabbing one of the teenage girls who was up there with that group. And if you don't do something soon, you don't know what these zombies want yet, but it
they're
can't
going
be.
After.
There's, yeah.
All signs point to brains.
All signs point to say. Not great. And Alina has things handled, but she is also facing off against two zombies right now.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
So as I pick myself up off the floor, I've got popcorn stuck in my hair, and my right shoe is just stuck in a popcorn bucket. I'm going to try and sort of charge up there. Going through Ben's mind, these are still just people pretending to be zombies. There's no such real thing as zombies. Mm-hmm. So if he can scare them enough and you know, frighten them away, he'll be able to like mm-hmm. save everyone. So as I'm running up to like physically help, like I'm just gonna try shoving them off, I'm also gonna try like tricking them, because the movie's still playing in the background.
Yeah.
So this is one of the big scenes where like they show the most of the monster. They show like one tentacle.
Yeah, tentacle. It comes up onto the container ship.
But what I want to try to do is use the projector to cast this huge illusion into the theater of all these other tentacles reaching out of the screen. Ooh, okay. Into the theater.
Oh, no.
Nice. Okay.
That's so cool.
And is that
at the very least, everyone else is going to run out of the theater.
Yeah.
I won't make
it. I'm doing it to like sort of also save the people who aren't running away yet.
Yeah.
This whole place is a powder keg.
So it sounds like you're trying to mislead, distract, or trick someone.
Correct. Yeah.
So would you roll plus superior then?
Roll plus superior, which I click. Is a plus 3. Oh, that's why I like that move so much. Okay. So I rolled a 10.
Okay.
Plus 3 gives me a 13.
Okay, so on a 10, on a hit, they are fooled, at least for a moment, and on a 10 plus, you get to choose 3. You get an opportunity, expose a weakness or flaw, confuse them for some time, or you avoid further entanglement.
I think I'm going to choose those first 3. I'll get an opportunity, I'll expose a weakness or a flaw, and I'll confuse them for some time.
Okay. So yeah, you are able to create. So describe for me what this hologram or what this visual looks like. With these tentacles.
Well, so it's a black and white film.
Mm-hmm.
So the hologram itself is also black and white. It's not going to be you know, a different color or anything. But whereas the image on the screen looks like, you know, like a crappy attempt to make some kind of sea monster tentacle, the ones coming out of the screen and like they're slowly. Sort of like the only word coming to mind is they're like sinusoidal, and that's not the word I want. But they're sort of like waving up and down as they reach out, going to different corners of the theater.
They're undulating.
They're undulating.
Okay.
They've got huge like suction cups grabbing onto things. There's like water dripping off of them. And they're just sort of curling around and over seats, permeating the entire theater.
And so this zombie that was hunched over this girl, and she's screaming and trying to like kick him away. It turns and looks up and sees this tentacle kind of undulating towards it. And in a very human way, just like panics and topples over the seat backwards. When he stands back up, he continue like he's just like looking around, and you can see that although his face is still illuminated by the projector, and it is still this sort of like red stained, sunken eyes, skin hanging off, kind of like zombie visage. The eyes are now very much aware and more human-like than the first ones. And it's turning and looking around, looking at all of these tentacles, and it looks at you, and you're kind of, like, not reacting to them. And you can see confusion and fear, and it is going to... This zombie is going to leap over the next couple rows of chairs over to where that first one that toppled down, or like that lunged towards you, and it's going to actually help that one stand back up. And these zombies kind of now helping each other stand up are starting to, and the two that are over by Alina as well are standing back up, and they're starting to back away from all of these tentacles, and they're backing away towards the exit. You also get an opportunity. What would you like to do? Like what?
I want to like help get people out. But I'm not sure. You know, I'm sure people are already getting up and running away. So I want to at least help that girl that was down.
Okay.
When you help her up, make sure she gets out.
Excellent. So you're able to get up to her quickly. Are you trying to not pass through these tentacles as they're moving through the room, like to keep the illusion that they are real, or are you walking through them? Like, how are you interacting as this theater becomes full of tentacles?
I probably have it in such a way where I don't need to walk through them. They'll sort of move out of the way. So okay. I'm not actually walking through it, but since I have some control over it,
okay.
I'm trying to make it seem still realistic.
And when you get to this girl, and she's like kind of curled up in a ball, and she's just kind of like, she's got like her legs pressed up against your chest, and she's just in this like very protective of form, but she'll kind of come out of that as you are there and are like clearly not a zombie.
I'm probably like on my way over. I'm running like, you know, get out to everybody, telling them to leave. But as I get to her, I'm like, hey. Come on, you gotta get out of here. I don't know what these people want, but like you'll be okay, but I'll help you up.
Okay. And she kind of puts her feet back down on the ground and takes your hand, and as she stands up, you can see that her shirt is covered in just like this blood red dampness. And it was like a white shirt. And right in the middle of her chest, there's a big sticker that says "Tomorrow night, Boris Bancroft's graveyard smash. Don't miss it." Alina, what are you doing? You're standing back up now from your crouched position, and these zombie forms are starting to shuffle backwards away from these tentacles, which maybe you assume are Ben doing some shenanigans, but I'm not. But tell me, do you?
Well, I think probably after I observe them not bothering Ben, I know that he is their daddy. So I'm not too worried about the tentacles. I've fought a Mantis Rex, in case you don't remember. So it's like not that big of a, you know, I think she's going to try to take a step back since there is no immediate threat. Assess the situation.
Okay. So roll for that.
Oh. That is
plus superior.
Yeah, but still not good.
Okay. What did you roll? You do have two team, Ben. So if you notice that, I don't know, if you can tell me how you would be helping her assess the situation, but you could spend team for that.
I don't mind spending one to help out. It's probably not super exciting, really, just in the sense that I see her, like, Alina is great at what she does, but she always has this look on her face when she's assessing the situation, when she's looking out over the room. Her eyes do this thing where she, it almost like she increases her field of vision. She could see everything at once. No one's told her. It looks a little like funky when she does it, but it's cool.
You can see.
But I can tell that that's what she's doing. So I'm going to try and tie into the theater controls and like bring up the house lights.
House lights. Okay. Excellent. So that will be a 7 then. So you get to ask one question. What here can I use to blank? What here is the biggest threat? What here is in the greatest danger? What, who here is the most vulnerable to me? Or how could I best end this quickly?
What here is the greatest danger?
What here is or it's what here is in the greatest
in
danger.
In the greatest danger.
I think that what is what's he, so this is what's here that's in the greatest danger is this group of four zombies. You have, just as two teenagers, clearly outclassed them. They're no longer really acting like these fat, like when, like, they are acting a lot like scared teenagers right now. That is very different than just a moment ago when they were acting like terrifying fast zombie, like when that first zombie leapt across a couple of the chairs towards Ben, like it was not acting like a human, it was acting like some kind of a monster, and so whatever was causing that has faded a little bit, and right now, like, they are not prepared for you, basically.
Okay, so basically I'm just gonna realize that these are kids goofing off in a really shitty way.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, what the hell is wrong with you?
And the one, they're like backing away towards the exit door, and the one is just going to yell out, brains? And is just going to back out through the door, and they're going to be gone.
Like all four of them?
Yeah, all of them. They're all backing out as a group. They kind of clamber, like they're falling over each other. They're moving more human-like, but they're actually more, like, they're still pretty clumsy, and they're not, like, fully the way you would expect a bunch of maybe, like, 18 to 20-year-olds to move. Like, they're a little bit shuffly, and they're moving as a group in a weird way, as though they've still got a little bit of that zombie with them. Okay. But they find their way to the door and back out.
I'm going to look at Frequency. I'm going to look at Ben and say, okay, so what do you think the likelihood is that they're going to tell the ushers on us?
What are they going to tell the ushers on us? We just helped a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
We should get, like, free tickets.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure those guys weren't actual threats. They were, well, they were jackasses, more jackasses than threats.
Yeah, I don't know. They seemed really serious at first, but I guess we're just, you know, more intimidating than we seem. But that girl that I helped up had this sticker on her shirt, and I like had peeled the sticker off, and I show it to Alina.
It says, Boris Bancroft's Graveyard Bash. One night only. Don't miss it. And you can see there is the head of, it's like the head and shoulders of the gentleman that you assume is Boris Bancroft. And he is a kind of wide man with a round, very round face. And he has a very, like, hard widow's peak with slicked back hair and thin lips. And he has in front of him, like, a microphone, and he has big radio headphones on.
Oh.
You might actually know Boris Bancroft. Boris Bancroft, especially Ben, as a young science kid, he is a not quite celebrity. He's kind of in that, like, he's a little bit less Bill Nye and a little bit more Beekman's world. He's kind of like a local, he has a local science radio show aimed at like maybe high school kids. It's kind of like, it's not really a great show, but every once in a while he puts on some big music event because although he is a science, like he's a science person, he still works for the radio station. So they like wrangle him as a personality into doing a show. And, like, okay. I guess there's like a group of people who feel nostalgic to him, to his shows when they were younger, and so they bring him out as like a personality. So he's a person, you know, you probably recognize his voice, but this, I don't know, it doesn't really make any sense to you why he would be. He's certainly not a supervillain.
Okay, to your
knowledge. Let's cut back to Ramon. Where are you and what are you doing?
I'm sitting on top of a closed dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like in an alley, and there's a couple of just like destroyed jack-o'-lanterns that met their end too soon sitting on the ground near me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've got like a bunch of like dirt and plants coming off of me, and I'm kind of like trying to rub them off. And there's some cuts in the leather from the slashes. And like, he's like touching at the skin underneath, like really delicately, and like, oh. And just using, I feel like he's got a communicator in it, because we have communicators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like at this point I have to have connected the communicator to my mask.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense for me to not have done that. So he's like tapping the side of his mask, and like, call frequency. Call frequency, and the call's already gone through.
Yeah. So Ben, you are in this theater, picking up and showing Alina the sticker, and you get a phone call from...
Call frequency.
From Ramon, and he's saying...
Call frequency.
Hey.
Call frequency.
Hey, Ramon. You got me.
I stole a werewolf cell phone. And I think...
Wait.
No, Ben, put it on speaker.
Hang on. Alina's here with me. I'm going to throw you on speakerphone.
Oh, call Alina.
No. Call connected.
Just go. Thank you, computer.
We bump fists.
Okay, Ramon.
So I stole a werewolf cell phone. I think she was listening to a podcast, and it turned her into a werewolf. And we got to stop the podcast.
Okay, like someone dressed like a werewolf.
No, a werewolf.
Just a great werewolf.
So
as far as I know,
I mean, can you describe this werewolf?
Okay, picture a wolf.
Uh-huh.
Now add some wear and just like big. Big claws, big teeth, my hand inside of its mouth.
What?
I got it back.
Whoa.
Claws, scratching, and headphones around its neck.
Okay.
Okay, but Ramon, like...
The big stupid ones.
Is this just a person dressed like a werewolf, right?
This is not... I saw the transformation. Listen, I'm telling you, there's a werewolf out there, and a podcast turned someone into a werewolf, and it's this Boris, I've got the name too.
Bancroft. Right?
Boris
Bancroft.
Yeah, Bancroft.
Yeah. Boris Bancroft doing some kind of spooky graveyard night.
Bash tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just bought off some weird kids dressed like zombies. They were like promoting it. But you're saying this was a real werewolf?
You can check the scars. You shouldn't check the scars. I need to get home. I need to figure. Give me a second. And we see him like rooting around. He now does have a bunch of pouches. and is like going through pouches and like pulling things out and putting stuff in. And there's just like tons of rustling from the inside of his mask as he tries to figure things out. And he pulls out just like some like thick black electric tape and is just putting it over the costume where the scratches are as he's getting back to the phone. I'd also like to return the cell phone if I can.
To the werewolf.
I mean, tomorrow, maybe during the morning.
Okay. Maybe. Do you need a ride?
I can meet you somewhere.
Well, we're at the theater.
All right, I can get to the theater. All right, I'll call you back soon. And then you just hear, like, sounds of him, like, running through the city and, like, making big jumps off of buildings, just like, wah! And it's, like, coming through on speaker inside the theater.
Yeah, I don't think he hung up.
No, you're recording this, though, right?
Yeah, we just saved that.
We see a panel of Ramon. We see the panel of Ben and Alina hearing the sounds of Ramon hurtling himself and the like sound bubble of him doing physical activity bleeds over into the next panel where we see Ramon like throwing himself between another building and then landing on the roof of this theater that Ben and Alina are at, next to the big glowing letters Starlight Cinema. And below him, we see him like kind of sitting in, or crouching on the corner of this big, this roof where it juts out over. And there's like the kind of like variety of burned out orangey lights, of the front of the sign. And then there's like the section in blue, that's backlit in blue that has the black letters that list all of the movies they're watching. And like, normally it's like one or two, but because it's this movie, it's this like marathon. They're just like all crammed in with no space between them.
Lots of missing letters.
Lots of missing letters. Yeah.
Get the idea across.
Yeah. They ran out of letters. And so they like, they're just trying to get the idea across.
There's a lot of like fives for S's. And
yeah.
Yeah.
And then we see the last panel of our comic is it's this smoke filled room, and you can see there's like one of those electric things where it like it's like the dish, and it like, or it's a disc that has like a green electricity electrographing or whatever all over it. This man walks into the room and takes off a wet white lab coat and hangs it up, and then sits down and puts on these big radio headphones, and we get a close up of his thin red lips as he speaks into the microphone and says, "Thank you for joining me again on tonight's Bancroft Science Hour. I've been... Don't forget, tomorrow is our big graveyard bash. I've been working in my lab late into the night to provide for you a special offer. Anyone who comes to our spooky spectacular will be turned into a monster, should they wish. Won't that be fun for Halloween?" You turn to the last page of the comic and find a page of letters to the editor. Do you have questions or comments? Send your letters in written or short audio format to letters@protean.city. We'll publish a few with each issue and a response from our editors. Aaron writes, "What's each of the main cast's favorite and least favorite Halloween candy?" Well, I spoke with the writers and we've come to this agreement. Frequency likes Nerds, but hates candy corn Fanta. Sokotoa loves Jawbreakers, but hates licorice. Crosswind loves Fizzies, but hates Warheads. Night Owl likes Pop Rocks, but hates those wax sodas with goop inside, by which I assume she means candy corn Fantas. Lena loves Reese's Cups, but also hates licorice. And John loves Starburst, but hates Sour Patch anything.
Protean City Comics is a production of the Stop, Hack, and Roll podcast network. It is produced and edited by James Malloy. This issue was emceed by James Malloy, who can be found on Twitter @AndTheMeltdowns. Windshear is played by Brandon Leon Gambetta, who can be found on Twitter @DrCaptainCobalt. Frequency is played by Rob Harvey, who can be found on Twitter @RHarvey1211. Arcana is played by Jess Benini, who can be found on Twitter @HerlockHolmes1. The introduction is voiced by Peter DiGilio. All music was composed by Jim Malloy. Masks, A New Generation is a game by Brendan Conway and published by Magpie Games. This podcast is created thanks to the financial support of backers at patreon.com/stophackandroll. Join us on our Discord at discord.stophackandroll.com. Follow us on Twitter at Protean City and on Instagram at Protean City Comics. Subscribe to Protean City Comics on iTunes or anywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Wednesday to find out what thrilling adventures lie ahead.